Scripture this morning is taken from Nehemiah, chapter 4, verses 1 to 6. If you'd like to follow on the screen, it's up there. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of the associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah, an Ammonite who was at his side, said, "What are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones." "Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So we rebuild the wall till all of it is reached half its height, for the people worked with all their hearts. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading this morning.
Here we are in Nehemiah again. For those that have joined us for week three and have missed the first 2 weeks, and you might have thought, "Oh, I've dodged a bullet here," but that's all right. But for those that want to go back and hear what's happened in the first 2 weeks, the recordings are online on our Facebook, on our website. So if you'd like to know more about that, you can ask us at morning tea. It's good to be with you this morning. It's good to be in worship. It's good to see some new faces, new names. Kenny, it's all right. Welcome, mate. Good to see you. Ken is Sharon's new husband. And so he is there, so well done, congratulations. Last weekend, they thought, let's get married instead of going to the high tea. So that's what they did. That's not exactly what happened at all, that's not even the truth. But
still get a donation.
But congratulations guys, and welcome, and I wonder if this has been your experience. At any time you try to do something, you have all the best laid intentions, you have a list of that you want to get achieved because it's going to make a difference, and then what happens to your best laid plans? They get rained on. Yeah? Mine usually just get punt kicked straight out the front door, and I don't seem to get anything achieved that I want to get achieved. Is that anyone else's? You look at your to-do list at the end of a day, or maybe you don't do to-do lists. If you don't have a to-do list, God bless you that you can survive in life without one. That's not my story. Okay, I need one, and I need a long one sometimes. But I look at the to-do list at the end of my day, the tasks that I had planned, and what happens? There's sometimes more things on there at the end of the day than there was at the start. Has that ever happened to anyone else? There's an element of frustration that seems to just well up within me when I think to myself, I had 9 things and all of a sudden I've got 14. What? How come? And I thought I'd been crossing things off. Other people get involved. We have best laid plans. I always say that I put my to-do list together and I look at it and say, "Lord, this is what I've got planned for today. If you've got other stuff planned, then you need to interrupt." And so I always take interruptions, and Debbie and I have often used saying that we work in a ministry of interruption. We have our plans for the day and then God interrupts and puts us on his path sometimes. Sometimes interruptions we see as a negative thing, don't we? They're opposition. We can see them as obstacles. We can see them as resistance to what we're trying to achieve. Within the world in which we live, we grow up with forces that are for good and forces that are for evil. We learn about that when we walk into the superhero land of a young person, or maybe an old person like me who is a bit partial to superhero universe. I'm still in a delusion that I'm 15 sometimes, and it's nice. Well, we have the Batman, don't we? And we have the Joker. And we have Superman. And what is his adversary?
Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor. And Kryptonite is the thing that slows him down. We have Spider-Man. And who comes up against Spider-Man? Venom. So we could go on all day and that could just hijack the entire service, but that's not what we're here for this morning. You could go into the scriptures and see a similar adversary list. Adam and Eve, the serpent, was their adversary. Moses and Pharaoh. David, come on. Goliath, we all went to Sunday school. Jesus, the birth of Jesus, came up against the Herod when he was first born, and then against the Pharisees throughout his ministry life. Hopefully these aren't new. Nehemiah had some as well. Sanballat and Tobiah were his adversaries. They were his joker to him being Batman. We've been learning about Nehemiah the last couple of weeks, and you would remember from the first week and possibly last week, I hope so anyway, that Nehemiah was the cupbearer for the king Antaxerxes in the 6th century BC. And Nehemiah being the cupbearer, what does that even mean? It means that he was so lowly within the house of the king that they were prepared to give him the poison chalice if he had to drink first of the cup before the king got it. And if he gets wiped out, well, that's okay. We'll get another cupbearer. We're happy to let you go. You're just, you're not worth very much within the household, so you're the cupbearer. He heard about his homeland in the time of after the fall of the wall in Jerusalem. He heard about his homeland of Israel. It broke his heart. He then travels 1,000 miles, 1,600 kilometres for those that live in the metric land. He inspires people to do what they thought was impossible and to think that the impossible might actually be possible. Have you got an impossible task that's been on your to-do list for many, many years? So he went and he rebuilt. He rebuilt, slowly but surely. Now, in the passage that Debbie read for us this morning, in verse 2, it says that Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall. He became angry and says, in verse 1, in verse 2 he says, about the Jews, what are those feeble Jews doing? Now, we read feeble and think, oh, well, that's just a normal old word. But the reality is, in the original text, the word feeble is the same word that they would use to say that something's cut off and that it's dead. I thought we'd wiped them out is the picture behind that same word in the original text. And so when you read about, what are those Jews doing? What are those feeble Jews doing? I thought we already addressed this issue. We don't want them. We don't want them to rise up again. Same word would be used to describe to cut off a flower. What happens when work is happening, when there's good work to do, opposition shows up. Debbie shared this morning and suggested that we think back on the time when Jesus first called our name. Who remembers the week after Jesus first called our name? It was rainbows and lollipops, wasn't it? And the second week? I don't know about anyone else, but I seem to have the worst week known to man after those hilltop experiences. Anyone ever had that, where they have a hilltop experience and then you think to yourself, how come we can't still feel like that, right? So often when God calls our name and we have a fresh awakening of Him working in our lives, resistance comes almost immediately. I remember the first time that I helped out in kids' ministry when I was about 16 or 17. I went on a kids' camp thinking I was all that. You know, I've grown up now. I'm not even grown up now. But I thought then, I'm growing up, you know. I'm getting treated like a leader. Here we go. First morning of camp, of a seven-day camp, a six-year-old overestimated the size of their belly. Fruit Loops went from here to here, all over me. All of a sudden, what I thought was a status became pretty gross pretty quick, right? I had vomit from here to here. This child overestimated the size of their stomach, and all of a sudden, here I am with Fruit Loops from, well, what felt like ear to ear, and that smell that stayed with me for an entire week, which was glorious, no matter how much I washed it and tried to get it away. How about when we go and tell somebody something that's been on our heart and they tell us, don't be stupid, wake up to yourself. That's not what we need at all. That moment when we become vulnerable in front of somebody else and all of a sudden they just shut us down. And actually, your feelings don't matter. And by take that even further, what we feel sometimes is that we don't matter. Don't be surprised when you face opposition. I'd argue that the enemy never tries to bother those who aren't a threat. We can do the comfortable thing, we can live a comfortable life, or we can do whatever it takes to bring people, to let people experience the love and grace of Jesus. It's really easy not to share about that. It's really easy to leave it to someone else. What happens when we leave things to someone else is that invariably they're leaving it to someone else too, and then it doesn't get done. There's always, always opposition. Always, always critics. How do we even respond to critics? Have you noticed what Nehemiah does in this passage and in the book of Nehemiah? He never responds. He never answers them. He doesn't defend. He keeps focusing on what God has called him to do. When you acknowledge your critics, you give them power. They're not really that important until you respond. Sometimes we're the critic. We're seeing that other people are doing great things for God or great things within community, and we're the critic. Let's not be the critic. Let's challenge each other to be the one that gives life with our words, gives hope, and gives encouragement when no one else is. Sometimes we don't understand that the word of encouragement that we give can have such power and effect that it lasts with people for years and years and years to come. We can often think that it's a flippant throwaway comment. And yet they see it as something that is spoken to the very depths of their soul. Nehemiah knows what it means about criticism. He got it in a large dose. Nehemiah doesn't let praise go to his head, nor does he let criticism go to his heart. Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. They kept the focus. In the midst of what they were doing, in the midst of negativity, they paused to pray and then got back on with the job that God had given them to do in rebuilding the wall. There's both a spiritual aspect to that and a practical aspect. We can be totally distracted by those around us who are really loud with their negativity towards what we're trying to do in bringing life and the kingdom of heaven here. We want to see his kingdom come, don't we? We want to see the kingdom of heaven played out here on earth. Yesterday, as was shared during the sharing time, I did end up with a whole bunch of people that I normally wouldn't spend a Saturday afternoon with necessarily. One, it was outside, it was 30 bazillion degrees, and humidity was about 400%. And it was pretty unbearable at times. But what I said to the person that I journeyed with yesterday afternoon on the way home is that what I saw yesterday was people hungering for community, hungering for wanting to be noticed, hungering for wanting to be accepted. And I said yesterday, so this is not in my notes, I said yesterday, I think the Christian church broadly has missed the boat in lots of ways. In accepting people, we've been too quick to judge and criticize. I'm not saying that I agree with entirely of lifestyle choices and things, but I'm saying that God asks us to love. People know that we're his disciples because of our love for one another, not because of the way that we judge. And I was really encouraged when I heard today and yesterday, here are God's children enjoying themselves in the outdoors. You know? I wonder what we can do in a greater capacity in the next day, week, month, year to make sure that people are noticed. People are noticed and that they are known. There's a spiritual and a practical aspect about this because it's not just that as if we need to pray so that God turns up. He is already at work and we are joining him in his work, right? But I think the challenge for us is that we need to pray as if everything depends on God and then work as if it all depends on us. So we bring our part to the table and do our part, but we pray as if it's all dependent on God, knowing that he will take our fruit of our labors and multiply them till it's running over. In verse 10 and 11 and 12, we read these words. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall." Also, our enemies said, "Before they know it or see us, we will be right among them and will kill them and put an end to the work." Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." There will be external haters. There will be opposition from a relationship point of view. There will be spiritual opposition. The key point is that we need to be able to engage within society, knowing not what I am or who I am, but who God says I am. That we're free, that we're chosen, that we're not forsaken, that we are His child. How often do we meet people down the street and we say, "G'day, my name's Wes, what do you do?" Do you do that? Well, you probably don't say Wes because that's not your name, but do you do those sort of things? Have you had those sort of things happen to you? Where people say, "Oh, so what do you do?" As if to say that whatever you do defines who you are. Okay, then we retire. What are we then? Except free from going to work 9 to 5 and all those sort of things. You're still who you are. Your job doesn't define you. Our role within society doesn't define us. Within the church, oh, you're the pastor. What does that even mean? What does that even mean? It's simply a role. Does that mean that when I stop being the pastor of this church, that I'm no longer part of this family? I'll fight that to the day I die. But do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't define who I am. Just because I've now been shifted into this role from my last appointment, this is our third year, does not mean that I don't have emotional connection to those people, because that's who I am. Emotionally connected to people at our last church. That's the reality. What we do does not define us. Who we think we are does not define us. How often do we think we're not good enough? We don't count. Someone else will do it. And I don't know about you, but there are times when I get inside my own head and I live out the Eeyore version of Christianity. And it's not about anything else, but I tell myself so many things that aren't true that's all I have to work with. I must believe it. If you say it long enough and loud enough and hard enough, then that becomes your new truth, right? Well, no. It would have been easy for Nehemiah to go, "Oh, why bother?" and go back to holding the cup and playing the game of Russian roulette that's called being the cupbearer. It would have been really easy. There was plenty of opposition. It was loud. It was even to the threat of death. And he kept his eyes on the prize. That was to do the work that God had set them to do. The greater the opposition that comes against us, the greater the opportunity there is for God to fight for us. If we let Him. If we let Him. I'm guilty. There might be others here too who say, "Ah, I got this one. I got it. I don't need you. I can do it by myself. I'll call you if I need you." Anyone else ever said things like that? "I'll call you if I need you. I've got it." And Nehemiah 4, verse 14. "Don't be afraid. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome." Do we believe that? Do we believe that He is great and awesome? "And fight for your families, for your sons and your daughters, for your wives and for your homes. Remember that the Lord is fighting for you. You do not have to do this fight alone. There are people within your life who you would just desperately want to experience the love of Jesus. And you think to yourself, well, it's pretty well impossible. God is the God of the impossible. Nehemiah was telling the people of the Jews who were all saying it was impossible, what they saw in front of them was absolutely, from a human point of view, impossible. But Nehemiah kept their eyes on God. Maybe the impossible is within us, that there's a hurt deep within us that we actually aren't allowing anyone else in. I'm not going to let anyone know about the hurt that's inside me because I don't think that anyone could ever heal that hurt. Maybe that's what we think is impossible. And if that's the thing this morning, join with Nehemiah and know that the impossible is possible with Christ. The impossible is possible. That He is going in to fight for you to experience the exceedingly more than He could ask or imagine. He's going in to fight for you so that you can live out the John 10:10 experience of living a life and life in abundance. The greater the opposition, the greater the opportunity for God to fight for you. Who's fighting their own battles this morning? We don't need hands up, but who's fighting their own battles? Who's saying, oh, I got this, I got it, I don't need anyone else's help, I can do this. And God says, I'm here to fight for you. Why would we get into a fight? We've all been in school, haven't we? And where we've seen the big kid. And there's always been that big kid that kept us safe at school. I wonder sometimes why we get ourselves involved in the fight when the creator of the universe, the same God who flung stars into space and that the words of His mouth, light, came into being, wants to fight for us. Why do we get in there? Let Him do it. We've got to surrender. And maybe we just want to sing, I surrender some, or a bit, but it doesn't fit with the other words in the verse, so we probably shouldn't sing it. I surrender all. I'm going to let you fight my fights for me. I'm going to let you fight my battles for me. Knowing and trusting that you've got this. We're going to sing in just a moment a song that is really a song of surrender. It says, Lord, make me like you. Please make me like you. You're a servant. Make me one too. There might be a level of impossibility within your mind. There might be a person who you think is lost and needs the hope of Christ. As it says in Nehemiah 4, remember the Lord who is great and awesome and fight for your families, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes. And friends, go from this place today, praying to God as if it all depends on Him, and then work like mad as if it all depends on us, bringing our offering of perspiration to the situation and allowing His divine presence to make the impossible possible.